Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What's up, fellow addicts? This is Shannon, the producer of the SDR show. On this episode, joining Ralph Sutton and James Mattern, you may know him from In Living Color, the movie Booty Call, Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, so many other shows and movies. It's comedian and actor Tommy Davidson. They discuss a lot about Tommy's origin story, which includes being abandoned as a baby, adopted by a white family. Also the drama behind the scenes of In Living Color. It's a really fun episode overall. He actually talks about meeting Michael Jackson also. It's really fun. We do the show live every Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. That's for free. But if you go to gasdigitalnetwork.com and use promo code SDR, you'll get a 7-day free trial, which gives you access to every single show we've ever done. You get the shows sooner. You get to take part in the live chat, the HD stream, so many perks, as well as access to every other show on the Gas Digital Network. So that's completely risk-free. Promo code SDR, gasdigitalnetwork.com. For right now, here is the Tommy Davidson episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoe. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is The SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me as always, James Mattern. Shannon is doing the production. We're jumping right into it. We don't have a lot of time, and God damn it, am I thrilled to have this dude on. You might know him from In Living Color, from Booty Call, from Bamboozled. Fucking great new book called Living in Color, What's Funny About Me.
Wow. Nice.
And a clothing line called Tongue in Cheek. It is Tommy Davidson. How are you, buddy?
Looking out of my lonely room day after day.
Don't ask me to join you because it's
Cardinal Wings. That's just, yeah. No. I mean, I've got to throw it in there. I mean, you know, I mean, this looks like it's one of those kind of, you know, kind of quilt.
Oh, yeah, quilt. Like one happy, big, happy family. Yeah. We'll do it. So I would say I'm an audiobook fan. I don't read. I'm old. I don't want to wear glasses yet. So I listen. I'm 90% through your book. And holy shit. Did I love it so far? I mean, maybe it takes a turn at the end that I hate, but right now, 90% in, love it. Man. And I'll tell you why, a couple of things. We're going to get into it, but I have a couple of things to hit with you.
I'm curious. Because I want to get into it. From this book. Not get a lot, especially the audio one.
And I've been listening. But before we get into it, I want to tell you a couple of quick things. Number one, a million years ago in Miami, I'm a creep. It's very well established. And I used to go to the model volleyball things all the time.
Right, the Volleybalooza.
Yeah, and I just am in the corner masturbating, hoping to turn on a girl, whatever. That's me. I'm in the corner. Look at that idiot over there. And you were the host of it, and it was fucking great, and I loved it. I just want to set that at the top of the show. Right.
Lots of chicks.
Oh, none were interested in me. Not a single one.
I mean, you got to talk to them, man.
I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible. Yeah, also, I'm 6'5". I look like a monster. Whatever. It's awful.
Yeah, you don't... Even Freddy Krueger could score.
He had better game. He'd go in the dreams.
Yeah, I know.
He'd wake up thinking about it.
Freddy, you know, he'd do the whole thing.
Okay. Yeah. But a fascinating story. We'll get into the book, but I want to tell you why you and I have two synergistic parts of our lives. Okay. One, interesting. You were in Showtime at the Apollo, the competition early on in your career, and you went all the way to the finals, and you lost to a singer named David Peaston.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. I know David Peaston. He's passed away now, but I knew him since I was like 7 years old. He passed away years ago, yeah. My mother ran a comedy like variety club in New York City called Upstairs at Green Street, and she was one of the first people to put him on stage, along with she put Chris Rock on stage, Susie Essman on stage, Joy Behar. I know Susie also auditioned for In Living Color with you. And then David Peaston, I was 10, but I was like good friends. Like I knew him well because he would play all the time. And then to hear you say that you lost to David Peaston, I was like, holy shit, That's fucking wild. And I don't know if you know, he won so many times that they had to create a Piston rule where they said you can no longer win more than six times because he was never going to lose.
Wow. I didn't lose. It was
I thought you said you came in second. You came in second.
It was rigged.
Oh, was it?
Well, you know, how do you rig an how do you rig an applause, right?
Okay.
So we're at the end, and the Apollo is it's judged by the loudest applause, right?
Right.
So David Peetson, do you want David Peetson? Yeah. Do you want Tommy Davidson? Yeah, it was the same. David Peetson, yay. We want Tommy Davidson, yay. Oh my God. So the host goes, do you want Tommy Davidson from Washington, D.C.? Or no. David Peetson from New York City?
Oh, that is fucked up. That is fucked up.
I was like, but you know what? It's funny that everything is meant to be because I lost that, I didn't end up staying at the Apollo with their whole management. They had a whole management scheme. They're going to do a record for you, do all this stuff. I ended up pushing on to LA.
Mm-hmm.
See,
so that was it was kismet, as the Jews would say.
And then I went to LA and lost Star Search.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I ended up pushing on to In Living Color. So it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, we really want these things, you know, but sometimes we have to put them in the category of they're not meant to be.
Right. And it puts you on the path that you went to. If you would have been one that, who knows what would have fucking happened.
Right.
And what amazes me about this book, which it could not have been easy to be so open talking about, not only which I've seen you mention before about your how you were born and how you were discovered. We'll get into that a little bit as well. But to openly talk about the drug problems, your issues with, like, say, Jamie Foxx or all the, like, to put those to paper and at least also to say it in an audiobook, to be as raw and open as you were, I'm guessing that could not have been easy at all.
You know, it what made it a lot easier is the fact that I can help someone with my experience.
Right. Yeah, you know, for sure.
Why hold back? Why hold back the key to someone's future? You know, they may live through something like I did if I pass that on to them.
Right.
And that's the most important thing. But the one thing that's the hardest is to you know, the only thing that's attached to shame to me in my experience is the fact that everyone knows you're not perfect, but so.
Right.
You see what I mean?
Who is?
But so.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was just one of those things. My cousin David walked me to the subway. Not the subway sandwich shop, but in New York. and you know, what I said about Jamie and Keenan and all of that stuff, you know, I didn't say that to put anybody down. I talked about a bus driver that left me at the bus stop when I was a kid. I talked about the kids that, you know, beat up my brother.
Right.
I talked about all the people and all the events that made me who I am today and made me transcend all this other stuff. And he turned to me. I walked him to the subway like I did when I was a kid. And he turned to me and said, I don't want you to worry about what people are saying about your book. You wrote that book to free you.
I think it's incredible. Also, I think that fortunately, in the past, I'd say 5 years, men accepting their imperfections and being able to talk about mental fitness and wellness is finally becoming accepted, where 5-10 years ago, be like, suck it up and be a man. It's like, that's not really happening anymore, where it's okay to admit you have flaws. It's okay to say that I'm going through this. And I'm struggling. Like you even said clearly in the book, you went back and forth maybe, I don't know how many times, into rehab, and it was the culmination of all of them that helped you get to where you were. It wasn't one time that fixed you. Mm-hmm. It was the culmination of all of them. And being able to accept that, I think, makes us all better people and understand it's not just one miracle cure. You know what I mean?
And, you know, it's perception. You know, I wouldn't even be sitting here talking, you know, and it is my experience. You know, right. I think that strength flows from being able to be self-honest.
Right.
You know, to be able to be self-honest. When I was a really young, you know, I used to look at people doing things and say, I'd never do that ever. You know what I mean? And there I was. But look, you see, and I'm you know, I'm just really fortunate. I'm sitting here talking to you. Is Elvis?
That's true. Yeah. So many people didn't make it to the other side.
It's Bellucci. Yeah. I mean, it's like
we had him booked yesterday, Tommy. We're still waiting for him. we booked Elvis yesterday.
Yeah, I think the booker is lying to us.
All these years, goddamn him. I'm very upset with this man. I really love Persian suspicious minds live in Vegas.
James, I paid in advance for the Elvis booking. I don't know what's going on. I think I'm getting screwed.
If I ever see that crown here, if I see that crown, I'll whip his ass.
You might even say I'm getting bamboozled.
Oh,
bam. Wow! Zoom. So I want to tell you, this is, by the way,
I think he might be Rosie O'Donnell. Go ahead. But anyway,
this is by the way, I am in no way trying to put my experience towards what you went through, but there was a moment in the book that I could really relate to, and I would tell you my side, and then I'd love you to tell you yours. So I grew up in Brooklyn, right? And my mom only dated black men growing up. That's like from when I was, can I remember? That's all she dated, right? And all my friends were interracial and whatever growing up. I never knew about racism, really, right? And I'm in California talking to a girl. I asked my mother today how old I was. She said you were about 8. And I'm talking to a girl at the pool, and I mentioned that I'm Jewish, and she says, and she's my age, she's 8 or 9. She goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were normal," and she walked away. Right?
Oh my God.
And I didn't know what it meant. So I went and asked my mom, and she said, "Oh no, there's people in the world who don't like you because of your race, your religion, your color." And I went, "Really?" Like, I didn't even know. And you had a very similar experience.
Yeah, tell me about it. You ready?
Well, I don't want to say it directly, but in basically, well, let's start with your origin story, which you know, it's a very sensitive topic, that your birth mother basically left you in a garbage can, right? And your mother who raised you,
basically, like straight up,
yes, basically. I mean, it's basically is what it is, literally. Yeah. And then because your mother, I guess, had like a feeling because she knew your birth mother, and she decided to just go look because she had a feeling. Am I right with that?
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
Discovered you behind a tire.
Yeah.
And then decided to raise you. She was motivated by Kennedy to start just doing better. Your mother sounded, by the way, I'm sorry, you know, she passed, but she just sounds like, I mean, God, the world needs more people like that, for sure.
I'm a Bushka. Listen to you, man. This is the I think the special part of the whole deal for me is, and I'm going to hold it up like that is not, you know, don't put a finger on my butterfinger. You know what I mean? That's a package of experience to sink your teeth into for whatever it's worth.
Right.
You know, the key to where I am now is what happened.
Right. I mean, also it's your life. It is what happened, but you were raised by a white woman and father, and they had two white kids, and you grew up on a farm, and you're just like, hey, when horses are born, they're born in different colors. So you just assumed, sometimes you're born different colors, and you didn't know about races until you went to D.C., which is crazy.
I thought we were like cats and dogs, you know, they can have a litter and have a brown one, a white one, a black one. So I'm like, that's how we are, till I got to D.C., and then the black kids beat her ass.
Yeah.
You know, calling my brother and my sister white cracker and me white cracker lover. I go home, I go, why are they calling me white cracker lover? I like graham crackers. You know, I'm 5 years old. You know, white crackers are kind of dry. You got to drink something with them. You know, she said, that's what people, your color, call people our color when they don't like them. And I'm like, what color am I? They're like, I mean, what color are you guys? And they were like, we're white. I'm like, you know, you're peach.
Yeah, I've seen the Crayola crayons. I know what color you are. Yeah, yeah.
You know, so we moved to the suburbs. The first time I hear the N-word, grown men are chasing me home. Just getting serious now. So, you know, and they're saying, kill the Nick, you know. And so I.
Except they didn't edit themselves.
Yeah. So one day I come home and I go, hey, man, we got to stay away from these Nick because they must not be good people.
You know, that's really crazy.
That's what we call you.
Yeah.
Your color. And I said, well, what color am I? She said, you're black. I said, no, I'm brown like the crayons. So it was a whole thing.
But it's also such a beautiful testament to your mom that you grew up in such a home that you didn't even realize that was a thing. You know what I mean? It shows you how much love there was there. It's actually, as much as it is a scary story, it's also a beautiful story that you were unaware.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, now looking at the pandemic and looking at where we are after we came out of the Trump era and everything, I'm looking at a whole block, a whole generation of people that look at things that way.
Right.
But they've just been sort of skipped over by the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s because peace at one time was trending. That was the hot thing. Right. It was cool. Peace was cool. You know, loving your other brother and sister who were different colors and different backgrounds was cool. The hugest Coke commercial in the world was everybody holding hands, colors, right. Like to give the world a Coke and keep it company. You know, this whole thing, it was color sold things. You know, that was
United
that
was Colors whole, of Benetton was a whole thing.
Yeah, it was a whole stilo.
Yeah.
You know, so we went through a little throwback, but that doesn't make a reality.
Right. It just let's really call it doesn't. A hiccup, if you will. Hopefully we'll get around it.
Say people united will never be defeated. She's so right, because look what we're coming through.
Right. And now the one, if I'm going to give you one negative of the book, being honest negative here, I don't like that you didn't tell us when you found out your origin story. That's not in the book. When your mother told you, hey, this is the truth. This is what you never. No, not you don't tell me the date, how old you were when you found out. And that this no, not that I've heard, unless it comes in later. I still got 15% left.
Ralph, you
got
to finish the goddamn thing.
Yeah, maybe you missed that part.
Maybe, but
what's the explanation point?
Why wait? Why wait? Why wait? She actually got honest. You know, we were in a therapy session, and she actually told me what really happened.
Mm-hmm. How old were you?
I was like in my 30s, like early.
Oh,
like,
wow. Wow.
Maybe 29, you know, somewhere in there. And she said it. Hey, look, I was scared. I was out in the streets on drugs. I already had four kids. You know, I was scared and I just ran. I left.
No, not your birth mom.
Mm-hmm.
That part is in the book.
Okay.
When your mother that raised you told you how she found you.
Okay. That was later, because I knew that there was something.
Right. Obviously, you knew something, but it's such a shocking. Yeah.
When I asked the question, you see, and my brother was there at the same time, you know, and he's kind of like defending her and like, leave her alone. And I said, it just doesn't make sense. Something doesn't make sense. I'm not going to go on a tear on my own life.
Right.
Right. Unless something deep inside is telling me that something's wrong with me. And that's when she told me. And what she said was, the story that was told to me was that my mom was a civil rights worker and all of this stuff. And then she gave it to me because I didn't want you to feel like somebody threw you away.
Right.
You see?
Okay.
But it was just one of those miraculous moments in this freaking world that's been created by something better than us, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Where things come to light, you know?
I got you.
Like, you know, you can never say anymore ever in this country, ever anymore, ever, 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 that Black people are the problem if you saw what happened at the Capitol. So it's like, you know, it's like one of those things that you can't deny. Time solved it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the evidence of it. You know?
Right, I got you.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So now to just flip a little bit, things that I found phenomenal. The idea of you, Pryor, and Murphy playing the Comedy Store. It just, I can't even imagine what that must have been like, because you hadn't gotten Living Color yet. This is early on in your comedy career, and you were flipping where that, you know, you opened one night, or no, I think that they flipped and you were in the middle. But just the thought of that energy, it must have been, to this day, has to be one of the highlights of your life, right?
Of my life. Of my life. I worked so hard to get to where I was at that point. Mm-hmm. So many nights I went out and got standing ovations at small clubs for 3 years straight. And they told us, you know, we don't even want you at this club. You know, losing Star Search, losing the Apollo, you know, really being, becoming a better and better comedian every single time. You know, Tom Brady is an excellent, excellent quarterback. Michael Jordan is an excellent, excellent basketball player. I'm an excellent, excellent comedian. And I was at that point. So that night was a chance for me to prove it. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even like I was like, I'm going to prove that I'm, it was like Eddie Murphy and Pryor are here, and they're both my favorites.
That's so crazy.
Get ready for me.
It's great. It's such a great story to have.
Because I love performing. I do so many things. I sing and do jazz and money, all kinds of things. Stand-up comedy is one of the things that I do too. But it's one of the things that I worked on technique-wise, mm-hmm. and blended the talent with it. The other stuff is kind of just natural. You know, if I do Sammy, it's just like, you know, and I am telling you that it's not a lie. It's just like in me, or, you know, Stallone is in me, you know. Why you look around my house, Mick? My house stinks. Oh, Mick. It stinks, Mick. I never asked you for no favors. You know, it's like, that is like such an automatic, you know, Obama. You know, the thing that we should not only take a look at, but we should really nurture and make sure that we look at this as a group, not as individuals, you know. So that stuff is natural, you mm-hmm. know. But putting that comedy together, getting there in 88, 87, and watching Seinfeld on stage before they had shows.
Right.
Or huge movies, watching Tom Hanks do comedy, watching Michael Keaton do comedy, watching Whoopi do comedy, Roseanne O'Donnell, Roseanne Barr, Adam Sandler, you know, Jim Carrey, all before shows, before that, you know,
right.
Being there and seeing all of this stuff and going, you know what? I need to get better. I need to strengthen this. I need to strengthen that. So by the time it came for me to be on that stage that weekend with Pryor and me and Eddie, lights out.
That's so cool. It really is great. And then what I can't even fathom these days, because, you know, in Living Color comes, it's on the air for 5 years. You're one of, I think, two cast members that lasted all 5 years. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
By something like that. But the thought that 20 million people were watching those shows, you know, there's not, I mean, if there was a show now that had 20 million people, I mean, it's not even, they consider like 500,000 a monster success now.
Right.
It's
right.
So hard to fathom the popularity of something with 20 million. That's Super right. Bowl numbers now,
right.
You know,
right.
It's so, unbelievable.
Yeah. Unless you compare social media to like 80 million to someone who's on a toilet doing a poem. But,
no, but it's different. You know, the main reason I said it, the difference is that there's such engagement. Like, we had a friend that had millions of Instagram followers, and he couldn't get a lot of people to listen to his podcast because it's a different thing.
It's all different, yeah.
Yeah, and to know that they were glued to you for 22 minutes every week, it's hard. They just can't even – it's so crazy, so much so that in Living Color, which I found out from reading your book, is the reason fucking the Super Bowl has big artist performance. It's fucking crazy. Yeah.
Yes, and the singular reason for that is – Keenan Ivory Wayans, man. Like, right. You know, I think one of the greatest minds in entertainment is being looked over.
I think, you know? I mean, I could agree. Couldn't agree.
The germ of that idea is his. He led us in a direction that he was familiar with. He's this Professor Xavier, man. He took all these mutants.
And he's bald also, so it works out.
And he used his instinct and his gut. you know, and that has a lot to do with his family too, with the cohesiveness in his family. He took that model and used it for our show.
Right. You know? And just so the listeners know, there was a live episode of In Living Color that went up against the Super Bowl and destroyed it in the ratings. And the next year, the Super Bowl booked their first real pop star. They never did that before. They booked Michael Jackson.
I think they just went off the hook right away.
Yeah.
You know? It was such a big deal that we switched at halftime and we had like a Super Bowl like sheet where you'd be like, who will win? Who will have most fumbles first? What sketches will be done on Living Color was part of the Bills and the Cowboys. You were up there with, will Thurman Thomas score the first touchdown? You were on our goddamn prop sheet as a bunch of eighth graders in Vegas, which we shouldn't have been gambling anyway. Big shout out to Ross Santangelo letting us gamble at our house at that young age. God bless. I think I won because I had Fire Marshal Bill. I knew that there was going to be one of those.
Why does he remind me of one of the guys at the bodega in the morning that's going, is this your pastrami sandwich or what, dude? You know,
maybe I am that dude. I'm going to go there right now. I got an afternoon shift to do, baby.
Right. I was talking to my cousin about how is it that in New York, like within 60 seconds, you ask for a pastrami on rye with scrambled egg and American cheese, and like 60 seconds, the dude is like, yo, pow, and it's in your hand.
That's New York for you, buddy.
Bacon, egg, and cheese will come out before you even order it. They'll just rush it out with it. Yeah.
And it's scrumptious.
Yeah.
There's not a thing. The roll is perfect. I mean, everything's perfect.
I always feel there needs to be a national conversion rate for restaurants of New York to the rest of the country, because the best restaurant in Miami or California doesn't compare to the average restaurant in New York City.
Average. You go to the average deli and you sit down for a lunch or a breakfast or a dinner, you know, you can order anything you want.
Yeah.
You say, hey, ham and cheese. Okay. You know, you go somewhere else, ham and cheese. So how do you, they'll ask you how to make it, you know?
So let me ask you, you bring up Keenan. I'm not saying you go after them because you're very respectful on how you present them as people.
Right.
But it's very evident that there's tension between you and Jamie Foxx. There was tension between you and Keenan. Have they read the book? Has there been any feedback to you about the way they're portrayed or the interaction since the book has been released?
The only feedback that I got was from the Wayans side. You know, they weren't too happy about what was there. You know,
I don't see why, because you're very complimentary to them as far as talent goes.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I don't know how I'm going to feel about the book that comes out about when somebody says things about what I did. You know what I mean? Mm. But, you know, it happened. But, you know, the way the book is written is it's within context of the book. It's not within context of the individual. The idea of the book is, hey, how can I can say this straight up, man. How can I give people that I don't even know the type of love that I got from people that I didn't even know? And when I say that, I say answers to questions or moments of encouragement, you know, or physical help. You know, there's been times when, you know, I had, you know, didn't have the 50 cent to get on the damn bus, you know?
Yeah, and you're very open about that in the book as well. You talk about that, you know, that you kept your gig at the deli because you, even when you were like, you signed the In Living Color deal because you had to wait a year for that to start happening.
Yeah. And it's Russell Ritter. Okay. Russell Ritter worked at the deli that I worked at when I moved to LA. I was trying to do comedy, never lived in LA in my life. He took me under his wing at the deli. He told the managers of the deli that I was a great comic because he came to see me. Russell died an untimely death, you know, of an overdose. His daughter, who was 4 at the time, beautiful young lady. I mean, obviously his best friend. I go over to their apartment. We'd have dinner, you know. I was working at the deli, man, and taking the bus, you know. I met her Saturday night. She walks up to me. She gives me a hug. She says, I don't know if you remember me, but I'm Russell Ritter's daughter. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, I gave her a hug. I was like, I wonder what became of you. Mm-hmm. You know, I prayed for you so long. Your father was such a great person. The director of Booty Call, Jeff Pollock, great man. The movie wouldn't have worked without it, without him. He was gracious enough to let me write the movie with him. Okay. Died an untimely death, died young. His daughter was this bright-eyed, beautiful little girl. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm at some show like Entertainment Tonight doing, and she comes into the dressing room and she says, I'm Jeff Pollock's daughter. You know, and I was able to see, and I had so many prayers out to you. I missed you. Like, how are you doing? And she said, both of them are grown young women doing their thing in the industry, grown up to be balanced, really balanced people. You know, that's my book.
Right. I mean, I said I got about, I think, 25 minutes left to go through it. But I think it's so great because you are as open as you are about everything that happened. And I was like surprised that you're talking pretty openly about the nepotism at In Living Color and the friction with Jamie Foxx. Mm-hmm. But then the other stories that are surprising, like Tupac being a backup dancer. How fucking crazy is that? Right. And then Puffy being your PA. There's so many like holy shit moments in the book. And by the way, the segment that you said was never only played once. You can watch Bolt 45 is on YouTube, just so you know. I watched it. Yeah. The only sketch to ever get banned from In Living Color. It only aired once, but it is on YouTube. I watched it this morning.
When was it? Is the Sammy one?
The Bolt 45 with where instead of Colt 45. Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can watch it.
Yeah, I wonder if my Sammy one is on there.
They're all on there. They're all on
Sammy
there.
Is Mandela.
Yeah, it's on there. They're all on there. It's not good quality. Somebody's like filming. Somebody's
allowed to be frivolous.
What's that?
That was like she got word check. My wife has word check on herself. So it said it. They'll, you know, that's the word. It means this.
Or I'm hearing myself.
Allowed to be frivolous.
Wow. This guy there. Okay, I was hearing myself back for a second. But did you keep like? Also, what I did like is you did keep a lot of these friendships where it shows like with Puffy, with Spike Lee, all these relationships that you met along the way, you stayed friends with to this day, which says a lot about you as well.
Well, I actually stayed friends with a lot of people who ain't my friends, you know? You know, but hey, what are friends for?
Right. Say la vie, baby. Say la vie.
Yeah, this is a weird industry where that, you know, this is, and of course this is subjective, but you know, there's three things that seem to stand out, you know, now that I'm older and can look at things more 2020, hindsight always is, mm-hmm. but you know, one is an inflated sense of self, you know. Two is a never ending cycle of negative competitivism, you know. And mm-hmm. with those things working all the time, they can be hard on friendships. They
of
can
course. Be hard on relationships. And also that it's an instinctive, not instinctive, but almost like mm-hmm. hardwired in our DNA to be competitive with other people that are in your industry, just things that you can't avoid.
It's why girls don't like other girls.
Yeah. Because they're just, all like, bitches. No,
because they understand that no matter how nice she is, they don't know what this bitch is going to do. Yeah.
And also you got to get to know
you first.
You
know,
kind of touch on this, by the way. So many of the sketches on In Living Color could never be fucking made today at all. And you even say a few times that it's hard to watch when you go back. And on that tip, I know you get asked this a lot. It's one of the few casts that have never done a reunion, to my knowledge. Are you ever going to do one, or is that never going to happen?
Of course we are. But, you know, right now is not the time.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's going to be the time. We because there's no one that can do what we did together like the way we did it. Anytime we get together, if it's some kind of award or whenever they call us all together, it's trouble. Because, you know, the people who put it together going, guys, you can't really, guys, I mean, come on, we don't have time for, we listen, can we stop this for a second, you know what I mean? And we're just on the ground, you know, we're just running around the place. You know, it's just one of those things where we're the perfect combination.
Right.
All of us, and we all got each other wired. We all know. We all know what bothers the other.
You know what buttons to push with each other.
We know what bothers the other motherfucker, but we also know the stuff that will get the other motherfucker to bring it hard. You know, because we had to make the stuff work before you saw it.
I love hearing all those stories, hearing all the stories too about how the sketches come about and how you all went back and forth with each other and you rewriting an ending to a movie and all those other things. It's a lot of great stories. Yeah. I can't say enough good about it, but we don't have a lot of time with you. So I just have to wrap up with, we're going to do the first, but I have to ask a couple other quick questions. One, did you ever meet Sammy Davis?
I didn't. But after he passed, I became a really good friend of his wife's and we tried to get the movie done for years. And she passed away during that process. So, and they wrote me a letter when I did Sammy, both of them wrote me a letter. So that's that. And then with Michael Jackson, I got to meet him.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Finally. And performed at his house. And
Wow.
I got an email when he died. My agent sends me this long email that he sent him about me.
Wow.
And I'm like, why didn't you send that to me before? He was like, I don't know, man. I was like, and he'd give me all these compliments about how talented I was and all the things that I was doing. And I don't know.
Talk about a day late and a dollar short from your agent. Jesus Christ. Yeah. I mean,
he sends me after it happens, you know. But you know, I am fortunate that my experience was able to culminate in something that people can put in the palm of their hands, you know, and be able to extract something good from. Right. Because Lord knows, in this world now, you know, extracting something good from what's happening can be a difficult thing.
For sure. Yeah. And I tell you, I recommend, I can't say enough good things about the book. I really enjoyed it. We don't have a lot of time. So we got to do the first before we go. Cause we told them you'd only be 40 minutes. So let's do the first.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask everyone their first experience with all three. I know the first concert you ever went to, but because it's in the book, but I mean, that one your mother took you to. But what about the first concert you went to on your own volition?
14 years old. My mom wasn't home. Me and my buddy, Tony Briscoe, we jump into her RX-7 Mazda, which is a stick, you know. Light up a little bit of the hemp thing and roll out to the Earth, Wind, and Fire concert.
Oh, that's great.
You know, the Serpentine Fire tour.
Come on, baby.
You know.
I saw them in 86 or 87. I saw them.
Right.
Which was great. I don't know, that was when they did that. They had a big like comeback hit. I forgot the name of the song right now, but it was a great song. And I got to see them at Radio City Music Hall. It was a great
show. Could have been any song. Yeah. So that was that. Go ahead.
That's good. Now, the first drug you ever did after pot.
Right. After pot?
Yeah, because pot's everyone's first usually.
Well, I'm from Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Washington, D.C., you know, black teenagers, you know, the thing was, you know, PCP was the thing.
Whoa.
So we call it Love Boat in D.C.
Love Boat.
Love Boat. That's that bit, you know. So. Go-Go is the music.
Yeah.
Love Boat is the DOC, right? So, and that's, you know, it doesn't mix well.
God.
With like Jack. So if it's Jack's the drink and then that's the thing, then what do you think the Go-Go's are turning out like, you know?
So you did, how old were you when you dabbled in the PCP?
Oh, that was like 14.
Wow. So same year as the Earth, Wind, and Fire concert. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, it's a big year for you.
So and you now, what about being on Dust at Earth, Wind, and Fire with those costumes? Holy shit!
any other Dust it out? Questions?
No. And then the first time you had sex.
You have to say the age.
If you don't want to, you don't have to. But ideally, you do. It's not. We're not going to force you.
It's really young.
Okay. And was it someone also young or someone older?
Older.
Oh, okay. And was it a nice experience?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to push any further. So now, really quickly, we'll say this. TheTommyDavidson.com, at TheRealTommyCat on Instagram.
It's way better than Magic Mountain, but go ahead.
Shop Tongue in Cheek is your clothing line as well, right?
Yes.
And then the book is called Living in Color, What's Funny About Me. Last couple of questions. I know we don't have too much time. You said at one point in the book, you're 20-0 in fights. Are you still undefeated in fights?
Yeah.
All right, good for you.
But I don't want to get in one.
No, of course. We're old now.
I think right now I'd be 20-1 quick.
Could you talk about almost getting to a fight with Will Smith in the book, which is a great story as well. I don't want to give away the whole book.
It was close. It was real close.
And then also in looking at that book, that movie, which I had never heard of, called Pros and Cons, right. It's basically Get Hard, right? I mean, it's basically Get Hard 20 years earlier.
Yes, it is. And that's, it's done with a brilliant writer, a brilliant comedian. I think it's a brilliant movie. You know, not all of my movies, you know, got seen by everybody, but whose has.
Right.
You know, and I'd like to let everybody know I'm still a film star and still a movie star.
Absolutely. And obviously, still a comic.
I go around and I watch. I've been enjoying the movies and stuff like that and haven't done a movie in a long time, but I'm very good at it.
And also doing a ton of voiceover work for cartoons and stuff, too, which is cool.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful, popular cartoons. I've started out with Ren and Stimpy and The Simpsons and Ed, and Eddie and like Proud Family. So I'm when it comes to entertainment, you know, I fit the bill pretty good.
And then the last question, then we'll do the plugs, which I find interesting. You say this clearly. You grew up in an agnostic household.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong. I'm not religious at all, but it seems like as you got older, you did find religion. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, I found spirituality and religion very close to it.
Right.
You know? There's nothing I don't see. I was influenced heavily to look at that as crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, I really don't have a problem with a big group of people that do the same things over and over again that are good.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. That could not be more right. It's just that when the religion starts teaching negative things is what I don't like. But
you know, I watch out for that aspect of it. You know, that's why I'm more on the spirit. I am spiritual, period.
Mm-hmm.
Over the religious, although I embrace all, you know, but when you have those kind of situations, and this is subjective, you know, you can have one singular opinion about the next one and wage a war.
That's the problem. I agree with you. Couldn't agree more. All right. So am I forgetting to plug anything else?
Doesn't believe in what you believe.
That's the problem. You know, I think, what's his name? Ricky Gervais brought up a great way once where he said, there's 1,000 religions and everyone doesn't believe in 999 of them, but believes in their one. That's right. To be the truth. He goes, I just don't believe in one more than you don't, which I think is a great way to look at it. But anyway,
but you can throw, you can pretty much, you know, religion has nothing to do interracial relationships. For some reason, no matter what the rules are, when one group of people saw the other group of people that were different colors, the chicks on that side said, wow, the guys over there look pretty good. And the guys over there said, the girls over there look pretty good. And now we all look different.
Right. But that's not, I mean, it's always funny to me how people cherry pick what they want to follow in religion and don't acknowledge the horrible things in a lot of religions. But to me, as long as you're living a good life and being a good person, okay, that's all that fucking matters.
Hey, man, when the good stuff comes, the religion goes to the side and the lights go out.
All right. Before we go around and do plugs, did I leave anything out for you, sir, or anything else you want to mention?
No, you did. This is it. This is Tuesday.
All right, great. James, your plug.
Make no mistakes where you are.
That's right, baby.
That's Michael McDonald.
The James Madden on Instagram, The James Madden, the Commissioner Comedy Podcast, where I talk about the etiquette of comedy and the love and life of it. New comedy podcast dropping this fall with Shuli Agar called Thanks for Coming Out, a podcast about bombing, where we bring on comics and they talk about bombing and early material. And my album Check Spot is dropping this fall as well.
Nice.
Me doing stand up and asking, answering questions from an audience while they pay their bills. And real quick, I'm the opposite of you, sir. I've been in 30 fights. I am 10, 10, and 10. I'm the most criminally mediocre.
I am Spider-Rico. I am Spider-Rico.
10 ties? That's bizarre.
No, most street fights are draws. Most people know that.
It's usually
and then a bunch of people hold me back and shit, all that bullshit.
I'm 0-0. I've never been in a fight in my life because I'm 6'5". Nobody starts with me. I'm 6'5", 260. Nobody fucks with me.
Shannon, they look at you and go, I don't feel
it's
like
not worth fight. It's not worth finding out if I can fight. That's the problem. Shannon, your plugs.
Speaking of spirituality and fighting, I host a podcast called The Thing Is Ding, where we have guests on that are comedians, musicians, actors and actresses, and they come in and tell their personal stories about bad dates, street fights they've been in, and experiences with the paranormal.
And I know the answer already, that Tommy Davidson does believe in ghosts because it's in the book. So I know that you do. Right? So I'd be cheating if I pretended. We try and guess every week, but it's in the book that you do.
That's a finger roll.
Man, I've done some things for money, you know.
I'm sorry. Can I just tell a very, very quick story of the time that I met you very quickly, Tommy?
Go ahead, Shannon.
So I used to live in Miami about 19 years ago in South Beach, and I worked at a store that was on Alton Road. And there was a day that I was behind the counter just looking out the storefront window, and you walked by, and you walked by a couple of times, and then you came in and you were like, do you know where this like hair supply store or something was? And I was like, I'm sorry, I don't know where it is. And we talked for two seconds, and I was like, do you mind if we take a picture? And there was nobody around, but there was a homeless lady outside. So I gave her like my disposable Kodak camera, and she took a picture
of us. A while ago.
It's almost 20 years ago. I got the picture developed and she took the picture, but your head is cut out of it. So it's me.
Oh, just my God.
It's just me standing next to a stranger.
I love it so much. Yeah,
See, I'm here. See,
she tried to find the picture to show you for this, but we couldn't find it. But what are you going to do? I follow me over at I Am Ralph Sutton, and my other podcast on health and wellness with the founder of Juice Press comes out every Monday, called the Good Sugar Podcast. And Mr. Tommy Davidson, what a goddamn honor it was to have you on this show.
And mine's is easy. The Real Tommy Cat. IG.
The Real Tommy Cat.
You got
on
me.
Instagrams. And TommyDavidson.com.
Anybody who gets a hand of it, just know that my mom's heart is on every page, and all a lot of other moms. And a lot of great teachers and a lot of athletes and a lot of people, everybody that downloaded all the stuff that made me, you know, the person today.
Now, let me ask you this. We end the show every week with a song of the week. You've mentioned so many great hip hop artists that came on in Living Color over the years. Do you want to pick one and we'll play a song right now to close out the show?
Friends. Mm. How many of us have them?
Oh, Houdini. Awesome.
Yeah.
How about this? A white guy knowing it's Houdini off the top of my head like that.
And hey, you, Houdini's a Jew.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
No wonder I liked him.
Lived in Harlem.
That I remember.
I mean, this is amazing.
We're making all kind of connections tonight.
All right, we'll see you next week on the SDR show. Peace.
Listening to the SDR show.